Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another edition of KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week. You're listening to Post for Politics, Iowa style, where we explore and analyze who's been making news in and around the state capital, what that news is, and what it all means. We're glad you're with us. I'm Dennis Hart, joined as always by my partner in politics, Laura Bellin of the blog site Bleeding Heartland. Laura, here we go again. Welcome.
Good to be here, Dennis.
Well, the big story for us and for the nation as we come on the air on this Monday Night Live is that President Biden has just announced that Ayman al-Zawahiri, the leader of al-Qaeda and one of the world's most wanted terrorists, has been killed. Zawahiri, alongside al-Qaeda founder Osama bin Laden, oversaw the attacks on the United States on September 11, 2001, attacks that killed thousands of Americans and brought down the World Trade Center in New York City. Zawahiri was killed in a CIA drone strike in Afghanistan. Previously, U.S. forces had killed bin Laden in Pakistan 11 years ago. Laura, obviously a victory for American intelligence agencies, and it's very early to talk about this, but we specialize on this program and being very early in talking about things. Do you think this announcement can help President Biden's approval ratings in Iowa and help Democrats maybe in the November midterm elections in this state?
I think that the president's approval rating generally in Iowa nationally is not linked to foreign policy issues. And so I think that the Joe Biden's approval is still going to depend much more on where inflation is and where gas prices are than anything that happens abroad. But of course, something like this can't hurt the president, I don't think, in the public opinion.
Right. The president's approval ratings in Iowa are way, way down as they are across the country. He has had some victories in the past week or so. This cannot, I would think, hurt him in any way.
No, I mean, his job approval, according to the latest Iowa poll by Seltzer & Co., was at 27%. And it was already low last year in the low to mid-30s, but 27% is the second lowest rating that they found for any president in the Iowa poll for decades. So it's extremely low. But as you say, it doesn't hurt to have a foreign policy win, but most Americans don't vote based on foreign policy issues.
Speaking of the midterms, as I just did, there was word this past weekend about the midterms from the Democratic National Committee. We were expecting them to make a decision this week about restructuring the presidential nominating calendar and maybe move Iowa out of the first or second position. But they announced this weekend on a Saturday that they're not going to make a decision until after the midterms in November. Let's talk about the decision not to make a decision.
Well, there are a couple of ways to interpret this, and I don't have insight to what the members of the Democratic National Committee are thinking, but it's possible that there's already been a decision made to move Iowa out of first place, and that just wasn't something they wanted to announce before the midterm election, with Iowa having three competitive U.S. House races, a Senate race that's closer than usual when Chuck Grassley's on the ballot, a governor's race, and there might have been a perception that headlines that say the Democratic National Party is abandoning Iowa wouldn't be helpful. But it's also possible that within the Democratic National Committee that they still have no idea what other calendar to choose. It's one thing to say you don't like Iowa and you don't think Iowa should go first. And it's another to say, oh, well, we've decided on here's what the different calendar is going to be. So it could be that they're having trouble reaching that consensus. And that's why they kicked the can down the road for a few months.
Even if they make this announcement late in the year, there's still plenty of time to readjust the caucuses in 2024.
Yes, there is. But I think that Iowa is locked into holding a caucus 8 days before the first primary because that's in state law. And Republicans who are in control of the legislature and favored to remain in control of the legislature, there is no sign that they're interested in changing state law to give us a primary or move that date. So I think that, I mean, it may come to the point of Iowa having caucuses in early 2024 that are not sanctioned by the Democratic Party. That's possible. And if that happened, then perhaps the delegates from Iowa wouldn't be seated at the national convention. I mean, these are all possibilities.
Right. And that would be a sight to behold if the Democratic delegates were not seated at that convention. Now you have to stay tuned to Capital Week and we'll talk about all that no matter what happens. All right. The governor got a big appointment last week, a big announcement. She appointed a new state Supreme Court justice, David May. We're going to talk about him, but this was a big deal for a variety of reasons. Among them, it's her fifth appointment to this seven-member state Supreme Court. And now she and Terry Branstad, Republican who's preceded her, have now appointed every state Supreme Court justice.
This is a lot. I mean, to put this in context, Tom Vilsack was governor for 8 years and appointed four Iowa Supreme Court justices. Chuck Colver was governor for 4 years and appointed one who was then ousted in 2010 in the backlash over the marriage equality decision. And Terry Branstad was back in office from 2011 to 2017 and appointed three. So to appoint 5 out of the 7 Supreme Court justices in just a little over 5 years that Kim Reynolds has been in office, that's just a lot. And there's part of it. There were two justices who died in an untimely way. And then this last retirement, this was not voluntary. Brent Apple reached the mandatory retirement age. But for whatever reasons, Kim Reynolds is just more fortunate than many Iowa governors in terms of her influence on the highest court. So as you say, all 7 justices appointed by Republicans, Brent Apple, who was the last one appointed by a Democrat, he had been increasingly in the dissenting side on the wrong end of a lot of 6-1 decisions. And many of those, I think, are likely to now be 7-0 decisions going forward.
So let's hasten to say that she did not just pull this name out of a hat. She got 3 nominations from the State Judicial Nominating Committee, and she picked one of these 3, David May. What do we know about David May?
So David May has been a district court judge since 2016. And then in 2019, Kim Reynolds appointed him to the Iowa Court of Appeals. That's the second highest court in the state. So he was considered the very heavy favorite for this vacancy all through the process. And as we discussed a few weeks ago, only 5 people applied for the Iowa Supreme Court vacancy this time around. And that was a lot fewer than we've seen in the past. And I heard some speculation that people just thought this was a done deal for David May. So what's the point? So the State Judicial Nominating Commission forwards 3 names. They interview all the candidates and they forward 3 names to the governor, and she has to choose one of those 3 names. And David May, of course, was on the list. The other 2 were William Miller, who's an attorney in private practice, who formerly clerked for an Iowa Supreme Court justice, and Alan Heavens, who is in Northeast Iowa. He's a district court judge, but with substantially less experience. So what I thought was interesting was that of the 5 applicants, one of them, Patrick Tott, is the chief judge in the Northwest Iowa district. He's in the Sioux City area, and he has a lot of experience on the bench. I mean, the governor when she was announcing this pick of David May, she talked about his experience, and he does have quite a bit of judicial experience, but Patrick Tott has much more. And yet he wasn't on that short list. So that was a surprise to me that the State Judicial Nominating Commission, for whatever reason, didn't choose to forward his name to Kim Reynolds. But David May was on the short list for the last Supreme Court vacancy in 2020 when the governor selected Matthew McDermott. And so it was widely expected that he would be on the short list this time again and that the governor would choose him.
So he's been on the Court of Appeals for 3 years. Before that, he was a district court judge. Is there any record of opinions that he has written that might predict where we might go in similar cases on the state Supreme Court?
Well, he's written about 300 opinions just on the Court of Appeals, and he decided a lot of cases in the district court. The tricky thing is that at the district court level in the Court of Appeals, they're not supposed to do any independent interpreting of the Iowa Constitution. They have to follow the Iowa Supreme Court precedent. So we really don't know a lot about people's judicial philosophy. I mean, he said during his interview, which I watched again after he was appointed, he said that, of course, he tries to apply the law judiciously and without regard to his personal opinions. Of course, any judge says that they don't take their personal opinions into account, that they're just applying the law. But as a member of the Supreme Court, he'll be able to help interpret the law in a way that he hasn't been able to do before. So I think it's very hard to predict. He is perceived as someone who is friendly to conservatives. I mean, otherwise the governor wouldn't have appointed him twice now. But I don't know of any particular case. I guess the most famous case that he was involved with was when he was a district court judge and he dismissed the lawsuit that was filed by Larry Hedlund. He was a former former law enforcement official who caught the governor's vehicle driving about 90 miles an hour and tried to issue a citation and then ended up suing over a wrongful termination and workplace retaliation. And David May, he ruled to dismiss that lawsuit that was partly overturned by the Iowa Supreme Court. So that was perceived as a ruling that was friendly to the Branstad administration. But I mean, I wouldn't draw a lot of big conclusions just from one decision. And so we'll have to see where things go. But he did say during his interview that he's not going to make any promises about how he's going to decide any future cases. Of course, we have no idea what he discussed with Governor Reynolds behind closed doors. But I don't think that the governor would appoint someone who she didn't expect to have some kind of a conservative judicial philosophy.
Right. And I think it's safe to say after this appointment that the governor should be fairly comfortable with the state Supreme Court since it is her state Supreme Court.
Yes, I think so. I mean, I guess we'll find out. They're going to be hearing several cases that are of importance to her administration. Eventually, they're going to hear another abortion case. There are several open records lawsuits that are pending with the Iowa Supreme Court on interlocutory appeal. I'm actually a plaintiff in one of those. So we'll see what happens with this court and her administration.
Right. And I have engaged Perry Mason to represent you in your appeal, by the way. I want you to know that. He's still around. He's pretty good. See him in black and white all the time. All right. We've got some register polls, Des Moines register polls in Iowa. These are snapshots that came out last week. Still, you know, it's fun to look at these and see, you know, speculate how they might impact the November election. Let's find the first one. Let's take a look at the first one. A new poll last week showed that an overwhelming majority of Iowans, Democratic and Republican, rural and city dwelling, young and old, everybody, believe things in the United States are on the wrong track. 84% of Iowans believe that. This is unusual to have this kind of overwhelming thought.
It's striking and it's very believable because this tracks with national polling, which is also finding near record or absolute record high levels of Americans thinking that the country is off on the wrong track. This is a classic question that pollsters have been asking for decades. Do you think things are going in the right direction or are they off on the wrong track? And these are very, very high numbers.
65% of Democrats say the country's headed the wrong way, 95% of Republicans, but for very different reasons.
Yes. And the big difference between the poll earlier this year for the Des Moines Register and this poll was among the Democrats. There were in March, there were many more Iowa Democrats who felt that things were going in the right direction. And so as things have developed this year, and part of that, I think, is related to the U.S. Supreme Court overturning Roe v. Wade, but there may be other developments related to the January 6th committee's investigation, that there are now very large numbers of Democrats who think that the country is on the wrong track as well.
So we don't know how this is going to play out in November. We just sit here and we speculate, et cetera. Another new poll last week showed that inflation in Iowa, viewed as a critical issue among most Iowans, 60% say it's a critical issue. An abortion and the price of gas, a big issue for 54%. Probably not surprising.
Right. And inflation is a big issue because people, I mean, any day, anytime they fill up their car with gas, anytime they go to the grocery store, they're likely confronted with this inflation. I will say that it's a little bit hard to interpret these polls because we don't know who the different respondents are blaming for inflation. Some people might think that's President Biden's fault, and some people think that it's leftover related to the pandemic. It's affecting a lot of countries right now. I wanted to say one thing related to the wrong track numbers, that historically, when lots of people think the country is on the wrong track, that's very bad for the president's party in an election. However, this year, and we talked about this last week when we were discussing Joe Biden's approval rating, there's a really large difference this year between how Democrats are doing on the generic ballot in polling and how Joe Biden is doing with approval. Usually those numbers for the president's party in the generic ballot and the president's approval track much more closely. And so this wrong track number may or may not be correlated with how people are planning to vote in November. The polls seem to be a little bit unusual this year in that respect.
So I think the most interesting part of this poll about the important issues is how different the parties are looking at this. The Republicans' top issue is inflation. We're talking Iowa now, the Iowa poll. Gas prices, 69%. Inflation, 71%. Important to them. Crime, 59%. Democrats, not even close.
Right. And remember also that Republican politicians and conservative media outlets have really been talking about inflation a lot. I follow all of the Republican members of Congress on social media, and they are discussing inflation almost every day, almost daily in their social media accounts. And it's something, for instance, if you are in rural Iowa, which is where areas that are more heavily Republican, gas prices hurt you more because you have to drive more miles probably to get to work, to get to the store. And so in that sense, it's not very surprising that there's this disparity between what people think are important.
For Democrats, the top issue is, unsurprisingly, abortion. That's followed by gun policies, climate change, each with 69%, they say is important. Abortion, 70%. Democrats say it's important. Healthcare, 67%. That's not even close to what Republicans think are top issues.
That's right. And as we discussed last week, the same Des Moines Register poll found a record high level of Iowans saying that abortion should be legal in most or all circumstances. That was at 60%, which was higher than they've seen before. So when an issue becomes more salient, in this case, abortion, because of the Iowa Supreme Court and the U.S. Supreme Court overturning their abortion related precedents, and there is a lot of news coverage around the country about what's happening in the states that have already banned abortion, it is more at the top of mind for people that who in the past, those same voters might not have said that abortion was a very important issue, but they view it that way now. And so some people think that that could actually blunt the Republican advantage in the midterm election because it could get more Democrats energized to vote in November. I think it's way too early for us to say.
Right. Although we do specialize in too early. There's no question about that. One of the warning signs for Democrats, though, in this same poll is that independents also think inflation is the most critical issue, and that ties in with Republicans.
Yes. I mean, inflation, it, like I said, it affects most people on almost a daily basis. So it's hard not to notice when the basic things that you're buying cost more. So that is something, I mean, independents don't participate in midterm elections at nearly the rate of registered Democrats and Republicans, but you still can't win a statewide election, usually in Iowa, without having the support of at least of the independents. So it is something to keep an eye on.
All right. It is 16 and a half after the hour, wherever you're listening to us, and you are in tune with KHOI Radio's Capital Week, your one-stop source for everything political going on in Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart with Laura Bellin. We are here every week at this time to talk politics Iowa style and how it's affecting all of us. And all of this does affect all of us. There is another poll out last week we want to talk about, shows that most Iowans view education policies as a critical issue in the upcoming November midterms, but only 30% view school choice as a major issue, and that's something Governor Reynolds has really been pushing.
Yes, education is usually near the top of lists of voter concerns, and because whether you're in a large city or a small town, how your area schools are doing is very important and does affect a lot of people's lives. I think this poll about school choice is a little bit hard to interpret. 30% said school choice is critical, 42% said it's important but not critical, and 23% said it's not that important. But first of all, does everybody understand that when you say school choice, you're talking about diverting some public funds to private school tuition? And second, somebody might be against the governor's proposal, but say that it's important, that it's an important issue for them in the election. So I'm not sure how to interpret those numbers, but education policy, certainly both parties and independents, that is something that they expect the government to manage competently.
So do these polls tell us how people are going to vote in November? Absolutely not. It is so complex and so layered. There's no way to predict what's going to happen, really.
Yes. And in a lot of cases in a midterm election, it really depends on which side's base is more energized to turn out. And sometimes it's more of a mobilization question than a persuasion. So persuasion is when you convince voters to come around and vote on your issues. But mobilization is when you get more of the people who already agree with you to participate and vote. And I think that in a lot of midterm elections, it's really more about the turnout level and the mobilization.
Yep. Let's talk about the governor again. She appointed a rejected board member again. Governor Reynolds did this last week. Let's download this because this is really an interesting, shall we say, jousting match.
Yeah, so I've had my eye on this for a long time. The Public Employment Relations Board doesn't get a lot of publicity, but it is more important than most state boards and commissions appointed by the governor. It's three members. I have a full-time position. It's a paid position. The vast majority of state boards are unpaid and very part-time work. But the Public Employment Relations Board adjudicates disputes over public employees at the state level, local government, school districts. And so a lot of really important cases come before the board. And it's supposed to have three members, but for the last couple of years, it's had a vacancy. The governor hasn't filled all the vacancies. And it's been several years since the Iowa Senate confirmed any of the governor's appointees to this board. So because of the vacancy, last year when her members were not confirmed, she was able to just move them around and appoint the person to one of the vacant spots rather than to the same position that he wasn't confirmed at. And that's what just happened again for the second year in a row. So Eric Helland, first appointed in 2020, not confirmed during the 2021 session. The governor appointed him to a different position on the same board last summer. He wasn't confirmed during this year's legislative session. And now last month, the governor appointed him again to a different position. Now this is the third position on the same board that he's held. So it's really just a flouting the Iowa Senate confirmation process. And this is not something that's normal for governors to reappoint people who were not supported by the Iowa Senate.
I thought you were going to use a certain term to describe this.
Well, we're going to get to that term later, Dennis.
Oh, we are. Okay.
Well, I've got the definition.
I've got the definition in front of me right now. Okay. I'm ready for you. Okay. Here's another very interesting story. Former GOP congressman endorsed two Democrats in Iowa last week. And this is a long time. Eastern Iowa Republican Congressman Jim Leach. And he endorsed a couple of Democrats.
Yeah, so Jim Leach represented for 30 years much of Southeast Iowa, Quad Cities area, and for a lot of that time, also his district included the Iowa City area. And he is more liberal Republican. I would call them Rockefeller Republicans, pro-choice, generally moderate on environmental issues. So really out of step with where the Republican Party is today. And he came out and endorsed Christina Bohannon, who is the Democratic candidate for Congress in the U.S. House in that Southeast Iowa district, and also Mike Franken, who's running for Senate.
So do you think that those endorsements are going to have any pull with voters?
I think it's hard to say. In the Iowa City area and the Quad Cities area, there still are some moderate Republicans, but really most Republicans who would have been in that moderate Jim Leach mold left the party a long time ago. My own father was actually one of those Rockefeller Republicans, and he's no longer living, but many of his contemporaries who are do not consider themselves Republicans. They either consider themselves Democrats or no party voters. So the last pro-choice Republican to serve in the Iowa legislature retired in 2008. So there really isn't a lot of space in the Republican Party for views like Jim Leach has. But on the other hand, there are still a lot of voters, especially older voters, and that's who most of the electorate in Iowa is over 50 voters. Many of them do remember Jim Leach and think highly of him. So I don't think it can hurt Christina Bohannon and Mike Franken to have this endorsement, but I don't see it as really a game-changing endorsement.
Okay. Well, let's talk about Joni Ernst, who is definitely not a Rockefeller Republican, the U.S. Senator from Iowa, Republican. She blocked something Senate Democrats tried to pass last Wednesday that would have guaranteed women the continuation of being able to use contraception if the U.S. Supreme Court overturns that longstanding precedent. Joni Ernst blocked that effort. Let's talk about that.
So this is a bill that passed the House with some bipartisan support. And within the House, it was also an Iowa Republican, Ashley Hinson, who led the opposition to this bill. But it got through the House, and Senate Democrats tried to bring it to the floor last week through a process that's called unanimous consent, which means that any one senator can object and stop this thing from passing. So it's not like a formal roll call vote where everybody is on the record. So any of the 50 Republicans could have stepped up to block this bill, but Joni Ernst took the role, and she is part of the Senate Republican leadership. So it must have been an issue that she embraced the idea of being out in public on. And she offered an alternative that was a companion bill to what Ashley Hinson had offered on behalf of Republicans in the U.S. House that would allow or would speed up the process of the FDA approving birth control pills, hormonal birth control, to be sold over the counter. But the Democratic bill that passed the House that Democrats are trying to get through the Senate is much broader than that. It says that there is a fundamental right to use contraception. It defines contraception fairly broadly, so not just hormonal birth control pills, but also long-acting and reversible birth control like injectable or IUDs. It includes things like barrier methods, like condoms, and it includes emergency contraception as well, which most people know as Plan B, so which often is used after either a sexual assault or a contraception failure. So the Democratic bill is quite broad. The Republican alternative, which Joni Ernst presented and said that this would increase access to birth control, would allow people to buy these hormonal birth control pills. Women over 18 could buy them over the counter.
So for a lot of people, they would look at that and say, well, now that's a reasonable alternative, what Ernst was proposing, to the Democrats. Why isn't it?
Well, I think, I mean, it depends on what your perspective is. And I think many people would say that it's a reasonable alternative. One issue with making a birth control over the counter rather than available by prescription is that insurance, health insurance typically doesn't cover anything that's over the counter. So actually, a lot of pregnant women will try to get a prescription for their prenatal vitamin, which you could buy at any drugstore. But if they get a prescription for it, then insurance will cover it. So if you're living paycheck to paycheck, and that you might not be able to pay out of pocket for your birth control every month, even if it is available over the counter. Another issue is that this is would only apply to women over age 18. So there are teenagers who are prescribed hormonal birth control, either as contraception or for issues like menstrual cramps and acne. This would not create access for them. And then there are people for whom hormonal birth control is contraindicated. So they can't use, they need to use some other method. And that this bill, this Joni Ernst bill doesn't cover those people. And also, as I mentioned, it does not cover emergency contraception. So which a lot of people might need or want after a sexual assault or a contraception failure. So it really isn't nearly as broad as the Democratic bill. So people can debate and reasonable minds can differ over whether it does enough to guarantee people access to contraception.
Okay, we have about 4 minutes left. Let's go to the other side of Congress. The U.S. House last week passed what I'm going to call an assault weapons ban, though the Associated Press may not agree with my terminology. That was a Democratic passed measure. Only two Republicans, none from Iowa, joined Democrats in supporting that bill, and it has no chance in the Senate.
That's right. And in a sense, it was surprising that the House leaders brought it to the floor. There was some debate over whether they had the votes in the House. It just barely passed. The majority that the Democrats have in the House is not large, and so they can't afford to lose more than a handful of people. So the Democrats are calling it an assault weapons ban. So I think it's accurate to say that that's what the Democrats say they passed. The Associated Press and some people say it's more accurate to call these weapons semi-automatic rifles or automatic rifles rather than assault weapons or assault rifles. Isn't it really a technical term that has a lot of meaning to people and doesn't tell you a lot about the function. But if you imagine the military style weapons, the AR-15 style weapons that are used in many of the mass shootings, these are the weapons that would be affected by the bill. If this was is similar to the assault weapons, what was called the assault weapons ban that passed in 1994 and expired in 2004 and was not renewed by what was then the Republican-controlled Congress and President George W. Bush.
And only a couple of minutes left. This has gone very fast. We have to get to the tuition increase for the state's three public universities. State Board of Regents unanimously approving a tuition hike last week, 4.25% at Iowa State, the University of Iowa, the University of Northern Iowa. So this impacts every student.
It does. And it's estimated to cost students about $300 more in tuition a year. And that's on top of past tuition increases. And I think that the big picture here is that state support for higher education in Iowa is nowhere near what it was in decades ago, 20, 30 years ago. What the legislature appropriated really covered a much higher proportion of the total cost of running these universities. But now tuition has to make up a lot more of the cost. And so the regents, as they were discussing in their meeting, that the universities are projecting to have a 3.7% inflation in their costs, and yet the legislature did not increase the funding by nearly that amount. They approved a small $5.5 million in additional funding, but that was after cutting $7 million in the previous year. So, and funding was flat also in the previous year. So it was cut in 2021 and then flat in 2022. So this $5 million increase, it really isn't enough to cover the rising costs. So this is going to affect all the students. The students at Iowa State, University of Iowa, and UNI are also going to have to pay more in student fees. And it just means that people who attend the universities and their families are shouldering more of the burden for the cost of running those universities rather than taxpayers as a whole in Iowa.
Very quickly, is it fair to say there's not a lot of support or sympathy for universities right now at the Board of Regents?
I think that that's true. And I think also that within the legislature, these are perceived as Democratic areas. There aren't Republicans who represent the Ames or Iowa City area anymore in the legislature. And I think that affects the willingness to give the universities the funding increases that they ask for.
Nearly out of time. What are you looking for this week, Laura?
I am watching the vote in Kansas on Tuesday, which is about adding an abortion amendment to their constitution. That is, the wording is a little bit different, but it's the same idea as what Iowa Republicans are trying to pass, and looking to see whether voters in that Republican leaning state will approve that language to add to their constitution.
Maybe next week we'll temporarily change our name to Capital Week, Kansas style.
Right.
You have a good week.
You too, Dennis.
We are out of time. You've been listening to Capital Week on KHOI Community Radio, and I hope you enjoyed it. A reminder that the views and opinions expressed here did not necessarily reflect the opinions of KHOI or its staff. Laura and I will be back in the same time slot next week, we promise, when we'll talk about everything interesting, important, or entertaining about politics Iowa style. We hope you can join us. Until then, thank you so much for the privilege of your time. We appreciate it and we value it. And between now and next time, you go ahead. Have a safe, healthy, and happy week.